And I'm really excited about this. You know, you think over the last decade, we've increased combined cycle efficiency by over 4 points. That was the technology challenge we had ahead of us. As we go forward in this decade, the technology challenges of burning hydrogen, we know what they are. They're solvable. I'm excited about representing a team that's going to go after this and putting hydrogen into gas turbines, lowering carbon emissions, lowering emissions for the world, and making it a better place to live.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to Cutting Carbon, conversations about our energy future. I'm your host, Jeff Goldmere, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Brian Gutnick. Brian, good day.
Good day, Jeff. Great to be back.
It's great to be here. Brian, today we're joined by someone I've known in General Electric for many, many years, a colleague of both of ours, John Entile. John is currently the Vice President of Engineering for Gas Power. John's been with the company for over 20 years. John and I first interacted when we both had roles in combustion, but John has had leadership roles in combustion, technology development, and more broadly in gas turbine systems for our products. John, good morning and welcome to Cutting Carbon.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thank you.
We're so thrilled to have you. John, I want to start our conversation today around decarbonization, but with a specific focus. As we see what's going on in the industry today, we see this laser focus on hydrogen broadly across all sorts of economic sectors, but today I want to focus more on hydrogen for power. My question to you, John, is this is not really new, so can you help our audience understand what it is about hydrogen and gas turbines that is so, you know, kind of amazing, but what do we have to think about in that context?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. As you mentioned, use of hydrogen is not new. You know, before stationary gas turbines used hydrogen, it was used in fuel in the development of jet engines, for example. You know, in the 1950s, Pratt & Whitney explored the use of hydrogen as a fuel in an afterburner. GE, as an example, has over 75 gas turbines that operate on hydrogen fuels, and we have 30 years doing so, using concentrations ranging anywhere from 5% to 95%. But hydrogen is a bit more challenging as a fuel. As we go up in gas turbine pressure and temperature for increased efficiency, the challenge gets even higher. Why? It's a good question. Reactivity, flammability limits, and auto-ignition timescales for hydrogen makes it easier to burn, and the gas turbine needs to ensure safe, reliable delivery of hydrogen into the combustion system while also making sure we meet emissions requirements.
So, John, maybe help us. So what is it about hydrogen? I mean, so you've got methane that's got carbon atoms and four hydrogen atoms. Now you've got pure hydrogen, H2. Fundamentally, what's different? You mentioned some concerns around flammability. Help us understand that a little better.
Yeah, so to get a little technical here, the flame speed for hydrogen increases about 25% as we go from an E-class or an older system to H-class. Further, the flame temperatures increase nearly 300 degrees for pure hydrogen over methane. So the issues that we have to face are really how do we do it reliably, because hydrogen has a greater flame speed, but also how do we do it with emissions compliance because of the flame temperature increase as well.
And John, I think about flames as a kind of a living thing, and the flame wants to propagate towards the incoming fuel. So that's the speed at which that flame will move and propagate towards that fuel. And I know that's important as we think about safe and reliable operation of these combustion systems on a fuel like hydrogen.
That's correct. You know, you think about it, we have to mix air and hydrogen together, or like we have to mix air and methane together. So the duration of that mixing time, if you will, or auto-ignition is key to understanding just how to burn it safely.
And John, you talked about how hydrogen burns hotter and how that relates to emissions. Can you give our listeners just a little more information? What's the tie-in? What's the connection between those two?
Yeah, NOx is pretty much, or NOx, or NOx emissions, is pretty much a function of temperature. As temperature goes up, NOx emissions goes up as well. So with hydrogen burning at a flame temperature that's hotter than methane, NOx becomes an issue, more so with hydrogen than it would be for natural gas.
Now, John, so many of our plants today that are burning natural gas, they have NOx emissions as well, and there are technologies, selective catalytic reduction, that can help to reduce that. Do those same technologies apply? Will they help abate this incremental NOx that's being created from hydrogen? And what do our customers have to think about there at the plant level?
Yeah, great question here. So there's nothing new about the NOx abatement. We'll be able to use a selective catalytic reduction, or an SCR, to reduce the NOx from the gas turbine out to the plant. So that technology exists today. So our plant operators don't necessarily have to worry about a new technology to reduce the NOx as it goes from the gas turbine out to the plant in the stack.
But presumably a little bit more, maybe CapEx in the SCR, capital expenditure for sizing it properly, and then probably some ongoing operating expense with the catalyst itself?
Yes, you could expect that this would be something normal. So if you have to upgrade your system for higher NOx, that would be just a simple CapEx update. And then the operating expense of the ammonia, which is relatively low relative to the gas itself, would be something also you'd have to consider.
Great, helpful.
So, John, that's really important as we think about that. And I do want to spend a moment, just because I think it's important. We've talked combustion, we've talked gas turbine, we've talked emissions, but there are other differences. Hydrogen's not just a drop-in fuel. Aren't there other aspects of the entire plant system that we'd have to consider if we're going to use hydrogen as a fuel?
Yeah, so you think about hydrogen, it's got low energy per volume. What does that mean? It means that more volumetric flow of hydrogen is required than methane to achieve the requirements of the gas turbine. So pipes have to get larger, as an example, Jeff.
Great. You know, one of the things that we hear a lot about is this concept of embrittlement, you know, kind of a nag worry that you sometimes hear. Can you explain to our listeners what embrittlement is and what steps would we take to mitigate that risk?
Sure. With hydrogen, embrittlement does become a concern for the pipes. As an example, hydrogen can diffuse into metal and form these little brittle hydrides, if you will, which create voids or stress risers in the pipes themselves. But there's technology and materials that go after that. So upgrading to a stainless steel 316 in the piping system is something that's readily available.
Thanks, John. And I thought I would share with our listeners, this concept or this issue of hydrogen embrittlement isn't a new phenomenon. In fact, if you go back 20, 30, 40 years or more, when the rocket industry was looking at using hydrogen as a fuel, embrittlement was a phenomenon they had to deal with. So the solutions that you're talking about here are solutions that the industry, you know, the rocket propulsion industry, the oil and gas industry, these are known solutions. We don't have to create a new solution. Those solutions are out there today.
And I think that's important, Jeff. The technology that we'd have to put into the plant, whether it's changing the pipe diameter, changing the pipe material, putting a new SCR or resizing the SCR, these aren't new technologies. They're really just how you scale it for the application of hydrogen versus natural gas.
And John, as we think about these changes that are required to be able to burn hydrogen, we could certainly make for new plants that are being built, make those changes together with the installation. Is there anything that precludes our customers from taking an existing gas plant and convert it to be able to reach the same levels of hydrogen?
There's really nothing technology prohibiting, if you will. In cases where customers want to upgrade their power plant to be able to burn hydrogen as a fuel, this could be done in a period of several weeks. It's akin to when we took an older combustion system, what we call the diffusion combustion system, and upgraded to the more modern DLN combustor. This is something we know how to do and something you can upgrade your existing plant within a matter of weeks.
That's great. One of the things that we've talked about, John, in some of our earlier episodes is this notion that it's not all or none. Our customers won't overnight have 100% hydrogen available to burn in their plants. For some of them, it may start with some blending in small amounts, maybe to begin with, and that could increase over time as more hydrogen becomes available at the right price point, right level of affordability. So if you think about that need for this plant to maybe change the amount of hydrogen over time, I guess, is that achievable? And what additional considerations would our customers have to think through?
Yeah, I kind of think about this in maybe three steps, if you will. There's this low levels of hydrogen where existing combustors today or existing gas turbines can be able to burn that and burn that safely. You know, you start achieving levels above 10%, maybe between 10% and 30%, you might have to do some upgrades as an example. But our existing 7-HAO2, as an example, can burn these sort of levels today. Pushing beyond 30%, you might put more changes into the overall power plant related to sealing, detecting leaks, and other technologies, but they're off-the-shelf technologies, if you will. So as you start to evolve from, you know, trace levels, if you will, or small levels of hydrogen through medium or even larger ones, you know, you can certainly upgrade your system to ensure that you've got the availability to be able to burn those as necessary and as required. Again, the technology exists today for the levels of hydrogen we're talking about, and they're not new to whether or not we have to put it into the power plant. These are off-the-shelf technologies. We've got 75 gas turbines today running over 5 million hours of operating experience, so we know what we have to do to upgrade the plants.
So, John, right, we know the technology is to apply. You know, the industry has experience, GE has experience. But I want to kind of refocus the conversation. As we think about this decarbonized, you know, society, decarbonized power, we're not talking about 5% or 10% or 15% hydrogen. In fact, those levels of hydrogen only give you small reductions in carbon footprint. To make a big change in carbon footprint, we're talking about hydrogen levels, let's say, in excess of 70 or 80% by volume. Now, I know we've done some of that in the past, but there's some interesting technology that's kind of been developed to kind of maybe enable that leap forward. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that GE's done in this space and what's so exciting about it?
Yeah, we've actually partnered with the United States Department of Energy and their advanced IGCC hydrogen gas turbine program, where we developed a low emissions or low NOx combustion system that's capable of burning over 50%, Jeff. This is a new combustion system that was based on operating principles of small scale mixing to really go after that auto ignition issue that we talked about earlier. And we advanced this pre-mixing technology, and it's actually part of our DLN26E combustion system today that's available on our 9HA and 7HA03 platforms. And so this gives us the ability to burn really high levels of hydrogen today and also to upgrade the existing fleet should the existing fleet also want to migrate there as well.
Everyone, I'm going to just take a pause for a moment. We've used a couple terms in the conversation today, and I want to make sure they're properly defined. So John used the phrase DLN. Now, that stands for a dry low NOx combustion system. Fundamentally, what that describes is a combustion system that burns a fuel with a lot of air, so a little bit of fuel, a lot of air, and what you get is low or lower NOx emissions relative to other technologies. And it's kind of a mainstay of industry today of how to generate power from a gas turbines with lower NOx emissions. We just use the term IGCC. That stands for Integrated Gasification Combined Cycle. It's a type of power plant that instead of using natural gas, will use a different feedstock. It might be coal. It might be some sort of heavy waste from a refinery. And what you do there is the G, gasify. You turn that solid into a gas. The I stands for integrated, so you're integrating that gasification process with the power plant. So integrated gasification combined cycle. And there are many plants around the world that have utilized this technology over the past two or three decades. And again, as you said, right, this is technology that we've developed, I think you said over a decade. And so it's not technology that's kind of waiting in the wings. It's, so to speak, to develop. It's technology, at least the fundamental elements of it, the architecture that now exist.
That's correct. Again, it was a 10-year journey working on this technology, so it wasn't something that was a small scale. It took us some effort to get here, and we're really excited about this technology. It's one in which we've tested out in our laboratory to be able to prove that we have the ability to burn this hydrogen levels of excess of 50% safely, reliably, and also under the emissions constraints that our customers have.
John, for those folks who are not aware of it, you mentioned, right, the laboratory. Can you give our listeners a sense of what that system is, what it's capable of, where is it?
Yeah, it's very important. So when we talk about burning safe, reliable, and understanding the emissions of natural gas systems or hydrogen systems, we have the ability to run under real conditions, full speed, full load, pressures and temperatures here in Greenville, South Carolina, across the E-class, F-class, and H-class, across a whole spectrum of fuels. We have the ability to burn natural gas in our facility here at full-scale levels, as well as any cocktail of fuel you can imagine, quite honestly, any IGCC-related fuels or hydrogen levels that we know we have to burn in the future.
One additional term I want to define for everyone here, FSFL, or full speed, full load, that describes kind of an operating state of the turbine. Again, think about the turbine. It has a rotating shaft. and that rotating shaft has a defined speed. As you're starting up the gas turbine, you'll build up the speed, the rotational speed on the turbine, but you might not be at full output. The term full speed, full load, defines the state at which that rotating equipment is rotating at the full speed. In some cases, that's 3,600 revolutions per minute or 3,600 RPM. And full load means the gas turbine is at its full output point. So again, just a definition of kind of an operating state of the gas turbine. And John, I know, as you said, I think key words there are full-scale hardware, kind of equivalent field conditions, full temperature, full pressure. And this is not a small facility. You think about it, we're talking air that's flowing through a combustion system at something akin to hurricane-type speeds. It's a massive infrastructure. And I know, John, that you're immensely proud of the team that works this and the technologies that come out of that facility.
Yes, it's funny. You and I have definitely joked around. If you can imagine trying to light your barbecue during the middle of a hurricane, that's the sort of conditions that we see within the gas turbine. Hydrogen makes it a little bit easier given its flammability limits, but certainly those are the aspects that we have to test in our laboratory to make sure we have safe, reliable operation of the gas turbine.
That's great. Hey, John, I'm intrigued by the level of experience that you talked about, the 6 million hours of operating experience on hydrogen or hydrogen-like fuels. It seems to me this discussion of use of hydrogen as a zero-carbon tool, while the discussions there are relatively new, how is it that we've had so many millions of hours of operating experience? Why were we pursuing hydrogen many years ago?
Great question, Brian. We were burning levels of hydrogen that we talked about, 5 to 95%, mainly because it was a fuel that was available from a refinery process or the like. So it wasn't necessarily being produced and transported into a power plant. It was very basically available and cheap for an operator to go ahead and burn. So it was a fuel that was more for us just because of the availability, be able to burn that readily. So that was the experience that we've had on our 75 gas turbines or so. It's because, generally speaking, we had the ability to burn off and off gas from a refinery process.
You're listening to Cutting Carbon. I'm your host, Jeff Goldmere. If you have a question on today's episode, a question on decarbonization in general, or a suggestion for a future episode of this podcast, drop me a note. You can reach me at cutting.carbon@ge.com.
Hey, John, maybe we could pivot the conversation here a little bit. Great insights on what it takes to be able to burn the fuel, burn hydrogen, in a gas plant, whether that's a new one we're building or one that already exists. For our customers, what you described, this sounds great, right? A new fuel comes to the boundary of my plant, and it seems like with some minimal changes, minimal investment in weeks, as you discussed, you could potentially convert that to burn. So if I'm a customer, this sounds really exciting. My guess is, though, that the challenges are probably move beyond the boundaries of the plant as well. Challenges of getting that hydrogen from the point of generation or creation of that hydrogen to the site. And, again, hydrogen is also a form of storage. So thinking about what it takes to be able to store it. So can you maybe talk about some of those challenges as well?
Yeah, as you mentioned, we know we can burn hydrogen in a gas turbine and what changes that we have to do in a plant. But hydrogen is generally produced and it needs to be transported and stored. And this requires upgrades to infrastructure. So as an example, you could store this as a liquid, but gaseous hydrogen will condense or go into a liquid phase at minus 423 degrees Fahrenheit. When you think about that, that's 20 degrees warmer than space. So that creates a challenge. But the world's largest hydrogen tank, it's not a technology we don't have, but the world's largest hydrogen tank is located at NASA's Cape Kennedy Space Center. Right? It could hold 850,000 gallons of liquid hydrogen. But when you think about that in terms of what it could be, how much of that could be used for a gas turbine, that amount of fuel could be used in a 7HEO3 gas turbine today and burn about 8 hours.
Wow.
So it's a technology we have. It's more of a scale. How do you scale that technology, as an example? Not a technology we don't know how to create.
So John, I agree, right? Storage is a challenge, but I think it's not just storage, right? Today, we all take for granted that when you go home and turn on your stove or the furnace comes on, there's natural gas coming to your house in a pipe. And it's just, it's there. We all take it for granted. That's not true when it comes to kind of the distribution of hydrogen in the future, is it? Is the infrastructure today compatible with just adding hydrogen to it?
Well, today in the United States, as an example, there are about 300,000 miles available to transport natural gas. That's how we get gas to a pipeline today. These gas lines don't have the capability to go north of 20% hydrogen. Therefore, modifications are required. However, we do have about 1,600 miles of hydrogen pipelines today as we transport hydrogen around. So, again, this is not a technology we don't know how to do. It's more how do we do it at scale. There's no technology issues to address. It's, again, about scale. To me, they're solvable. It takes some investment in the infrastructure, but one of which we know how to do.
Hey, John, as we think about hydrogen, so if I understand what you were saying earlier, you know, a lower BTU fuel, what are the implications of that in terms of thinking about a pipeline? If you think about the size of a pipeline to move natural gas, you know, with a certain heat content, and now I got to provide that same, you know, amount of heat content with hydrogen, does that mean I need a much bigger pipe? How does that work?
Yeah, as we mentioned, hydrogen's got a lower energy per unit volume. So basically what that means is you need more volumetric flow of hydrogen than natural gas. So for a given natural gas pipeline of burning 10 to 20%, you wouldn't have to change the diameter. You want to get to higher levels, 50% or so, the diameter of the pipes have to get larger to be able to get this volume of flow from one source into the plant.
And John, as we talked about kind of the material issue, I think it's not just about a bigger pipe, but it's a pipe that's got the right material selection to be compatible with hydrogen. We know that hydrogen, because it's a small molecule, can leak through things. So it's not just about a bigger pipe, right? There are other elements of that pipeline design or configuration that might have to look a little different than they would be if it was natural gas.
That's correct. You'd think about leakage detection and prevention requires some modifications to pipelines, as well as what you'd have to do in a power plant to be able to detect leakages from hydrogen, smaller molecules, as you mentioned, running at high pressure within the pipelines themselves. The material changes to the pipes are relatively straightforward, go into stainless steel 316. That's not an issue that we have to worry about technically. But sealing, sure, hydrogen is less forgiving than natural gas. Again, going back to the autoignition timescales and its flammability limits. So you have to be able to seal up a hydrogen pipeline a little bit differently than you would in a natural gas pipeline, for sure, to accommodate that.
Great. You know, there's another element that people don't always consider, and it's going to kind of bring us full circle here, is if you're moving gas in a very long pipeline from point A to point B, you might start the gas in the pipeline at a certain pressure, but over distance, that pressure declines. And then you've got to kind of reboost the pressure in that pipeline to keep delivering it. Now, today, some of that boost work is actually done by a gas turbine running a compressor. And those gas turbines today would just feed off the natural gas in the pipeline. But John, doesn't that now mean that, right, going back full circle, that gas turbine that runs that compression system would have to be able to burn hydrogen as the fuel in the pipeline? So it's not just the pipeline independent of a gas turbine system. Those two kind of get linked together, maybe.
Absolutely. We talked about a gas turbine the size of 7HAO3 producing over 430 megawatts. We have the ability to be able to compress and pump hydrogen fuels as well across the pipeline with our experiences. So you would naturally draw off the hydrogen, want to burn that in the gas turbine to be able to produce power for a pump to be able to pump the hydrogen further down the line. That's the beauty of gas turbines, is we have the ability to, at small scale, to use it as a source of power for the pump to get hydrogen into the pipeline, and then ultimately in a larger gas turbine, use it for power for electricity.
Hey, John, you talked about storing hydrogen as a liquid and, you know, this bringing it to almost the temperature of space in order to do that. Sounds complex. You kind of described it's definitely achievable. Are there other options for storage? Could we just store it as hydrogen in the state that it's moving through the pipeline, for example? What are some options there?
Yeah, you could store it, for example, in a cavern or a salt mine. or a depleted oil mine, as an example. We've heard about examples where you can produce hydrogen through electrolysis, pump that into a salt mine, and then as you need, you can get it out of the salt mine and put it into a power plant and burn that as well. So there's other options that are different than just treating it as a liquid and being able to store it and then transport it as a liquid. You could certainly transport it, and you can store it as a gas and then be able to get that into your power plant as well. We've seen examples of that through electrolysis, using wind turbines as an example, pumping hydrogen into the ground, extracting that back out, and then burning that as a blend or as a full hydrogen into the power plant.
John, that's right. And I know we won't cover it today, but there's lots of discussions about how would you take hydrogen and convert it, if you will, to a liquid that's got a higher energy density like ammonia or some sort of organic. I know we're not going to cover it today. So for our listeners, you know, kind of pay attention for a future episode, because there's a lot of interest in how do you move hydrogen, not as a gas or a liquid. So stay tuned for that.
Hey, John, I want to go back to, you know, in our last episode, we talked about the rainbow of colors, if you will, of sources of hydrogen from the different generation, green hydrogen from electrolyzers, blue hydrogen from natural gas, et cetera. If you think about the implications to the infrastructure, I think I know the answer here, but does it care? Does that infrastructure that we build out to move and store and ultimately burn that hydrogen care about the what type or what color of hydrogen it is?
No, it doesn't care about what kind or how it was produced. It's really the hydrogen amount itself. So how much you're blending, whether it's all of hydrogen, 100% hydrogen, or to what amount you're blending it with natural gas, that's really what the transportation and ultimately into the power plant really cares about.
That's great. So the infrastructure that the world potentially builds out might in its early days have one source of hydrogen kind of fueling it, you know, quite literally fueling it. And then over time, as the world maybe moves towards more green hydrogen, that same investment in infrastructure can be used regardless of, again, how it's being created. That sounds like a pretty important fact for our customers and the pace in which this is going to play out.
That's correct. The power plant or the gas turbine or specifically the combustion system is agnostic to how the hydrogen gets there. It's really the levels to which it has to understand and react to.
That's great.
Excellent. John, I want to thank you for spending some time with us today and providing your insights and knowledge in this space. I know, again, our customers are excited about this. There's a lot of interest from global regulators and the public as to how we decarbonize the power sector. This is such an impactful and important topic for our day. So, again, thank you so much.
Brian, Jeff, thank you. This was great to be here. Exciting times for us, for sure.
Thanks, John.
And for all of our listeners out there, thank you for joining us today. This is Cutting Carbon. Thanks for listening. If you want more information about today's episode, check out the resources available in our show notes. I'm your host, Jeff Goldmeier, and this is Cutting Carbon.